Welcome to Music for the Quarantine Soul. This is season 4, episode 1. Hey, Clifton.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. We are keeping warm today.
Yeah, it's cool outside, but warm inside, and we are approaching the end of 2022.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, right? And here we are. So anyways, we have our good friend Steve Cote joining us today. Hey, Steve.
Hello.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. I woke up this morning to start my car, and I accidentally left an A&W canned root beer, and
uh-oh,
it exploded all over the car. It looked like it's an absolute mess, but thank God it was cold enough for me to clean it up.
That is not ever a good thing.
Nope.
I'm hoping that there's people across the world that have no idea what we're talking about when we talk about frozen pop cans in our cars.
The can absolutely blew up. Once
yes,
you see
I
the
believe.
Picture, you won't believe it.
Send me a picture and I'll throw it up for people. Right. So anyways, we've got a little slightly different episode, not slightly, an incredibly different episode today. About a month ago, I was in my car and I had Sirius XM on, the classic Rewind channel. And they were talking about people voting for the top 40 cassettes that are turning 40 or have turned 40 in 2022. So I got a little interested and I sent the link to Clifton and Steve and I said, hey, we should do a podcast on this. So we've gotten together and we've picked our top 40 albums, cassettes that have turned 40 in 2022. There's some fantastic ones here. There's some that I have never heard of. And I guess we should also, I'm going to kind of call out our ages here. So like I was in grade 9 in 1982. And so kind of the start of my musical journey, I guess one could say. And I know, Clifton, you were a little bit younger.
Yeah, I was a little bit, not quite up to that grade level. But yeah, what was I? I was in, I think I might have been in grade 2.
Yeah, and you basically said to me the other night there,
or three,
your music was restricted to whatever your dad was playing.
That's right. Yeah, there was a lot of CCR and my grandfather's as well. Georgie Jones was on there. In my family, my dad loved playing guitar, and we were always kind of surrounded by singers. They would get together and sit around the kitchen table, and so I grew up listening to the local singers where I grew up in Duck Bay, and that was my upbringing. But a lot of these albums that we're going to be talking about today, they didn't come to me until in when I was in my teens,
right?
But this music was still very much out there on the radio, at the dances that we were going to. So it's actually kind of surprising that they were this or that old,
right?
Like if you were to ask me, like I would have, oh yeah, I was listening to these songs when I was, you know, 12 13 14,
right?
I had no idea that I was 8 years old when they came out.
Right. Yeah. All right. And Steve, you just told us before we started recording that you were a spry young 4 years old at this time.
Yeah, so none of this was in my realm until the 90s, till I started really understanding all this. I think the thing that surprised me the most about this list is a lot of the individuals started off their careers in the 60s and early 70s. And then now you see them come alive in the 1980s, where some of them had broken up in their bands.
Right.
Some of them had still continued and still in the band, or still in their former bands that they continued off making music. So it was really nice to see that they were still creating things, even though they already had a 20 plus career going into the 80s.
Right.
So since I'm a huge fan of the 60s and 70s, a lot of that stuff just listening to now brought back that what I really loved about those bands.
Right. And to the flip side of that too, is a lot of bands on here, sort of their first work, right? I can,
correct,
just looking at the top three or four here, I can see quite a few that just at the very start of their career, right? So,
or just like you said, a few years in.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, all right. So the format today is we're all going to throw out five of our picks, not necessarily our top five, but ones that we want to talk about. And then we're going to give you our rest sort of at the end kind of thing. And then I think we're going to throw up our list of top 40 and hopefully maybe we'll get a figure out a way that people can can vote on their top 40 from 82 as well. So anyone want to go first, or am I just going to randomly pick someone?
I don't mind going first.
Okay, you go first, Cliff.
Okay, so I've got to start here with the album that was now from the list. Let me just go back. I don't think I made a note of where it was on the list, but I can try and find it here quickly.
Now, the list that we used, I found it online, and I don't know if these were the top selling ones, or I'm not looking at the top two. I'm going to guess that this was a list in total sales, because there's a couple of massive albums there at the top.
So, yeah, this was the list that we kind of went from to formulate, right?
Right.
So this one was sort of out of the top 40, but it's an album by Aldo Nova. And it's his, I believe it's his first album, and it's self-titled Aldo Nova. And reached number 8 on the Billboard 200, was certified gold May 14, 1982, platinum on February 14, 1989, double platinum December 5th, 1994. This album was, it was brought to my attention by an uncle of mine who's since passed on, but Fantasy, It's Too Late, Ball and Chain. All of these songs that he has on this album, when I listen to it and I think about my own music that I write and sort of the beat and I don't know if it's style, but there's just something so familiar when I listen to Aldo Nova. Not that I'm comparing myself to any of his music or anything like that, but I think in the back of my mind that there's something familiar in the way that he approaches just his tone and his beat and his songwriting that I think I try to emulate. And then, of course, I've got all these country roots that are blending in there as well. So, but when I listen to this album, it really takes me back to just, you know, being a kid and just being around my uncle, you know, getting introduced to this music. And it would catch my ear at that time, but it wasn't something that, you know, I had to go back and have, for instance, right? Because that young, you know, we were primarily going to the radio, and when we were turning into radio stations that were playing rock and roll, then you would hear Fantasy or you'd hear Ball and Chain, and they would always just take me back to those memories of me. I mean, I was just a kid running around. But my uncle's blasting it on his vinyl player. And that's always a great memory for me. But, I mean, the music itself, whenever I go back to it, maybe that's why it is so familiar, is because, you know, I was just a kid and just remember it in the background. But there is something to it that also I think was an inspiration to my own musical style.
Yeah, it was. I remember when this album came out, and it was huge. As a, you know, I was, I don't know, 11, 12 years old, something like that, playing hockey. And it was in that crowd. This cassette was on regular repeat, kind of, for sure. And it was Canadian, right? So,
yeah. Aldo Nova, right? He came out of Montreal, Quebec, I think. And he's actually, if anybody's interested out there, like he released it's like a 2.0. I'll see if I can bring it up here real quick. But he's kind of... went back to all of his songs, all of his hits, and he re-recorded them.
Oh yeah,
2022 was the release of this Aldo Nova Reloaded. It's called 2.0, and just to listen to these songs again in today's terms of where he's at and how he feels about them. Like nothing's really changed about the songs, but. You can see that he takes a little bit of a different approach in his singing, and I mean he's in his 60s now, so he would naturally need to, but it's neat to see that, you know, he's still appreciative of the music that put him in the spotlight. big influence, great memories. I love the music. Check out Aldenova Reloaded 2.0.
Yeah, good pick. Okay, Steve, your pick.
This is my guilty pleasure, is the Richard and Linda Thompson record.
Okay, yeah.
Richard and Linda Thompson were folk icons in the 60s. And in 1982, they had done this record where I guess they were going through a divorce. So they ended up, this was their last record that they did together. It was kind of like a love record to the two of them, where they were kind of writing these songs. I think this is labeled as one of Richard Thompson's best works.
Okay.
My favorite song on the album is called The Wall of Death. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a very powerful song that just talks about, I think it's kind of like the retrospects of life. And it just, anytime I hear it, it resonates with me. And when I looked at this list 100 times, I just saw right before we signed on, I saw this album and I was like, wow, it's like, it was kind of meant to be, because this song has followed me for a long time. And it just, when I need something, I always listen to that, the song, The Wall of Death, because it just, I don't know, speaks volumes. And then now that I learned that it had to kind of do with their dissolving of their really long-term relationship in music and life, it's just more inspiring to me now.
Okay. This is one that I hadn't heard of, but you know, when you're 12 years old, unless someone gives it to you or says, hey, listen to this, then you're not likely going to run.
I think that's what's exciting about this, because we get to learn about each other and what music inspires us.
Yeah.
You know, so yep. Like this, I think once you, if you ever sat down and listened to them, there's a lot of songs that you would know, even okay. Clifton's last, that individual that he was just talking about, I quickly looked up and he has contributed to a ton of famous musicians, Prince, Bon Jovi. Like, it's kind of nice to see how maybe someone might not know who this artist is, but once you start to dive into them, they're responsible for so much more.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I also like to use that name. I don't know if you guys have ever played the game Balderdash, but whenever there's a word that I about once every 2 or 3 games, I'll come up with Aldo Nova's, how was his fourth album was called? And people look at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Unless I'm playing with someone sort of that knows something about music, they just have no idea. What. I'm the only one that usually gets the laugh out of it. Anyways, okay. All right. Well, I'll do my, I'm going to say this is probably my number one pick. Certainly okay. My top. Well, I mean, I said I went with the top five. I'm going to go with Business as Usual by Men at Work. And in 82, let me tell you, this was just all over the radio. It was just, you heard it over and over and over again. I'm pretty sure I had it on cassette. If I'm not mistaken, I'd have to go downstairs and check, but I think I did have it on cassette. And I lived it for a year in Australia when I was 7 years old. So I always had a little bit of an affinity for something out of Australia kind of thing. And then, like I said, you couldn't get away from it, right? The songs are just Who Can It Be Now is the big one, right? But Down Under, Be Good Johnny. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was in Mexico, my host brother, this is in 1986, I guess, so it's only a few years later, but I know he would always tell me there was a line from Be Good Johnny: don't slip up and play the fool. And that's my friend Luis would always say to me, don't play the fool, Bennett. That was his our little connection there. Skip, skip, up there.
honey. Don't you slip up or play the fool. Oh, no more. Oh, no da.
But just some great stuff. I can still listen to this whole album, top to finish. This is probably one of the first albums that I listened to from start to finish. And I know all these songs by heart. So that's my pick.
It says in 1981, they received a Juno Award for International Album of the Year.
Oh, is that right?
Or maybe it was it just says Juno Award for International Album of the Year.
Okay. Well, it was released in 81 in Australia. And okay. So I guess it kind of depends on how calculate the age of it kind of thing. I think it was released in the United States and North America in 82. So,
So right above it says 81. So you're right. So this album had a Juno Award for Album of the Year.
Yeah.
So
and it also, cool. Yeah, it also won the Grammy in 83 for Best New Artist. Great, great album. I might go listen to it.
And they also got sued a little bit.
They did. There's a track there with the flute solo is, I was just
Down Under.
Yeah, and Down Under, it was ripped off from a sort of a folk song, Kookaburra Sits in the Old Gum Tree, which I happen to know that song, written in 1932. And so, yes, there was a substantial amount of the original song been reproduced. And I guess the estate of the songwriter got 5% on future profits kind of thing. So a bit of a controversy. Wow. In 2010, I think it was kind of thing. But
see, good music just transcends time. I mean, you know, in 1932, like who would have thought that, you know, Kookaburra Sits Under the Old Gum Tree would influence a very popular song in Down Under by Men at Work.
Yeah.
I'll always say, like, I'm into songwriting, and I'll never ever come up, you know, with a notion that I think is original,
right.
Even though that's what I'm striving to write is original music.
Yeah.
But it just isn't. Whatever I can say and do and play, it's been done before.
There's and only probably 12 notes.
And done a whole lot better than whatever I can do. But I'll never stop because it's so much fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'd love to talk more about Men at Work, but we got a lot of albums to talk about here. So, Clifton, give me one more.
Yeah, I'm going again. You know what? Just through this list, I do have to say that my uncle was such a big influence. Like this, all of this stuff is just going back to my roots and discovering music and you know, kind of working out what sort of music was really starting to have an effect on me. And this album cover on this particular album, I think I would pick it up and I would just stare at it. And I wouldn't even need to listen to it. If I was any sort of an artist, I mean, I would have been drawing this thing all over my whatever I had going on in the dirt. I would have been picking up a twig as I was on the playground to try and, you know, draw this up. But Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance. It's their eighth studio album. They're an English heavy metal band. This was released, well, we're talking 82 here. So you've got another thing coming.
Yeah,
which was probably the biggest release on this. It actually was their breakthrough album that got them in with the American audience.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were touring. Rob Halford says in an interview that when they started, they released this album, and the first place they went to wasn't in the UK to tour it. They went straight to America because you had another thing coming that sort of started to catch on. And he says that they were touring like 7 days a week.
Oh, wow.
Like they were in another town, another city, and just night after night after night because they did it. They were grinding it out. They were building this following. And then they kind of went to the UK afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, just the songs on this album. Rob Halford is probably one of the greatest heavy metal, you know, vocalists. I kind of got down a wormhole as soon as I put this album on and I was listening to it on my Apple. But I had to go to YouTube. I had to go to the live performances, and it's just incredible. Just the I think we had talked in a previous podcast. I think, you know, what live performance, what concert would you go back in time to?
Right.
And I really think that this would be one of those concerts that I was at the time. It wasn't one that I thought of, but after watching the live footage from 82, it definitely would be a concert that I would go to. The opening track, The Hellion. Surprisingly, I didn't realize, but they've never played The Hellion live. It's always just a track. They kind of come out to it. It's only 41 seconds in length, but the album opens up with Electric Eye. I just love the song Riding on the Wind, Bloodstone, Take These Chains. You've got Screaming for Vengeance, and then of course you've got Another Thing Coming, and just an awesome album. I don't even have to listen to it. I could just stare at it, and I love it. So that's one of my picks, and it's right up there.
I was just reading here that You've Got Another Thing Coming was a late addition, and they kind of thought, we got enough room for another song here. Let's throw this one on, kind of thing. And
yeah, the producer, I think, might have thought so that they had. And it was actually their record company that they didn't really think too much about it, but the record company did, and that was the one that they were sending out as a single. And, you know, record companies, I guess, can be right in certain cases.
Yeah.
So that's what they went with. Yeah.
Awesome.
Is that the band that Mark Wahlberg did that movie about? There was like metal band. Is that
the metal band? Yeah. What was it? Wild Stallions? No, that's Bill and Ted.
That's Bill and Ted. Yeah.
Or something Dragon. Oh, I can't remember. Yes, it is though. But
I'm trying to look it up because it was basically loosed on that band.
Yes, and actually, so the guy that came in for Rob Helford when Rob Helford had quit the band, he was sort of like a huge fan, and he was playing in a sort of a Judas Priest cover band. He also had, I think, I don't know if the band had any original stuff, but they brought him in to take Rob Helford's place for a little while. So yes, loosely based on it. Yeah.
Yeah, Rockstar.
That's it.
I think that's the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still trying to remember what the band was called. But yeah.
Yeah.
Steel Dragon.
Steel Dragon, was that it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Check that out. Okay, Cote, you're up.
Just a quick shout out to YouTube. Everything's on there. If you type in the album and just say full, the full album should appear, and it'll give you everything on there. So a lot of the stuff that we're talking today that people are like, I have no idea what they're talking about. You can go to YouTube. You can search the full album. There's lots of live footage. You can look at a lot of these artists were inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's great ones on there. The Rush one is on there. Yeah. I recommend that. That's amazing. My next pick is REM, Chronic Town. This is their first release. It's like an EP that was done. I think there's there's about six songs on the EP. So this just kind of highlights the start of this band. They formed in 1980, and then this was their first release. And I think last year or the year before, they just got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is a great band that has survived decades of different genres of music. They put out solid music in the 80s, in the 90s. They were the forerunner on MTV and Much Music all the time. I had a friend in Winnipeg that was met them early on in the 80s, and he was a teacher. And in his during his summers, him and his wife would tour with REM across Canada and America, and they became really good friends. He had a correspondence with Mike Mills, and it was just really neat to go to his house to see all his kind of memorabilia of the band.
What would be the one song on this album that people might recognize?
I don't know. I honestly don't think anyone would recognize anything. But what is known about this album is that this was just the really turning point of their sound, right. And then everything else just got better. So it's a very underrated album because it's an EP, so it would have only been sent out to radio stations to get coverage or college play on indie rock. So this is called an indie rock album from them. Yep. So this is the first, but when you listen to it, it really has that starting sound of REM.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. They've got some great stuff that came obviously late 80s, early 90s kind of thing for sure.
Yeah. This is what was so exciting about this list is that there was just so many things to choose from. And a band like this that we get to hear, or you get in 1982, you get to see the beginnings of this.
Right.
And then this multi-platinum selling band, a few years later, it's kind of inspiring to see that they were able to be in the mix of greatness and right. then be able to do their own little thing in an independent indie band. And they right. become so successful as some of these other bands.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to explain how I made my picks here, because as I said, I was, just beginning my musical journey, about 12, 13 years old time. And so I made two lists. I made the list that Cam would have picked in 1982. And then I made a list of picks that Cam picks now. And then I looked for ones that doubled up kind of thing. There's a few picks from Cam 1982 that we probably won't even mention here. I think it's my most embarrassing pick from my own episode is on this list here, the Flock of Seagulls, but we won't talk about that at all. So I'm going to go with my number two pick, John Mellencamp, at the time, John Cougar Mellencamp, or no, I think just John Cougar at the time, I think, American Fool, right? Just some amazing songs on here. Hurt So Good, Jack and Diane that everyone knows, right? This is another album that I could just listen to right from the very start. Hand to Hold On To is a favorite kind of deep cut of mine there. Just a fantastic album. He was kind of started out as kind of a Johnny Cougar kind of punk kind of thing that the record company wanted, and that wasn't him at all. He was very much a small town guy, still is. And growing up in Neepawa, I was a small town guy. I still consider myself small town. And so this just spoke to me in 82 and continues to do so. Over and over again kind of thing. So I don't know. I can't actually remember if it made my top five picks, my quarantine five or not, but it was probably in the top 10 for sure. So
I think a lot of those songs from that album were a pinnacle of MTV and Much Music at that time too. I think that really helped his career by allowing him to do these videos. I remember that Jack and Diane video, where it told this like nice story. And I think things like that really helped people relate by seeing him in these videos, him acting or him telling these stories about his life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm just having a quick look here at his, American Fool was first, and then is the second one there. That one's got Little Pink Houses and stuff on it. He had a string of you know, American Fool, Scarecrow, Lonesome Jubilee, Big Daddy, just fantastic albums. And I went on a deep dive. I was in, hadn't tested positive, but was sick there a couple of years back. And I remember I went on a deep dive of John Mellencamp, and I'd forgotten how good some of his stuff is. It just kind of, his disc list just goes on and on and on. Like, he's got an amazing number of albums that have been released. And he's a fantastic painter as well, too. So
cool.
And unfortunately, a chain smoker. And I know his fans have tried to get him to stop because they want him to stick around, but I don't think he's stopped. But anyways, great album. Clifton, over to you.
Well, this next album here, this next choice, I've got, I think you can kind of see where I'm starting ahead with my choices here. Yeah. So Alda Nova, you know, there was some great rock riffs in there, and then we're heading over to Judas Priest, and I just have something for just something with a little bit of an edge. This guy was bringing something of an edge with just his delivery and his vocals. Some of the songs on this album might not have been so much edgy. They still had a bit of a pop sort of sound coming, you know, into the background there. But Billy Idol and his studio album, self-titled Billy Idol, was an album that just, you know, this particular one, it caught me again. You know, just like I said, you know, things were starting to form, and just the guy's voice, his vocals, there was just something to it. White Wedding, of course, part one, is still a song, and this goes right that, like I said, good music just transcends time, and you'll hear this song being played today. People know it. People jam to it. It's just such a great song. Hot in the City. Come On, Come On, I guess, is what I was sort of leaning toward. If you listen to Come On, Come On, you can really hear the juxtaposition of these kind of snarly type vocals with this really kind of soft rock sort of pop background that it has to it, and it you could put somebody else singing in that song, it's a totally different song, and it would just be so light sounding. But with Billy Idol at the helm, you know, doing his little snarl thing, you know, that's what sort of caught me, and you know, I kind of dug that. Just some great songs on here. The one song that isn't on here that I thought was, and I suppose they released it as a single, but was Dancing with Myself. Dancing with
Myself. Yeah, I thought it was on this
album. That's my favorite song. Yeah. So good.
I agree.
It's such a good song, and I think it's definitely one. I know that we're coming up with plans for a rock show that we're doing, and it's called Camapalooza. And hopefully we can get some sound bites from this rock show that we're going to put on to celebrate our hosts. I don't know if I could say it. Could I say it?
Yes, you can say it. It's not our host
retirement party. Yeah. But I think this, if I wouldn't mind to have this on the list, I think
we'll be a great I'm edition. 100% behind that. I'll have to double check the list I made last night. But yes. I agree. Fantastic. You know what? And you picked one of mine, Clifton. I'm going to have to grab another album here because there was actually a couple that Clifton and I shared kind of thing. And this was one of them. And the videos in 82, you know, White Wedding, I mean, Billy Idol, just his look and everything, man, he was just, he was hot in the city for sure on MTV Friday night videos, which I watched on Friday nights as a kid.
If you catch a hold of any McKenzie Junior High School yearbooks, from 86. You'll catch me in grade 7 with the Billy Idol.
Oh, I had the Billy Idol. Have to get Candace looking for that picture. Yeah, no, that's a great pick. You know what? To be honest, I had a quick look here at the tracks, and I'm not a huge Billy Idol fan, but I had to pick it just because it's an iconic album. And I mean, the mm-hmm. two songs, White Wedding is massive, right? Mm-hmm. Hot in the City as well. And I did too. I thought Dancing with Myself was on this, but it was released.
Yeah.
It was actually Generation X, his previous band.
Mm-hmm. Such a good band.
And then they remixed it and released it as a single. But I remember that song on Friday Night Videos as well. Yeah. Too.
And it set the stage for Rebel Yell, and yes. he took off, and yeah, it was great.
I think he was probably, to me, he was one of the biggest influencers of the 80s, right? He was this heartthrob. My sister was such a massive fan, and then he was this badass where he was like the guys of that generation. He was like the first independent guy where he was by himself. And then writing a song like Dancing with Myself, I think really kind of transcend that idea that you could listen to music. You didn't have to listen to this band, or he was like uncool at the time. But then everyone seemed to really like him.
And the snarl, right? I don't know how he can't even do it. Right? I don't know how he must have practiced that that lip thing. All right, Cote, we're moving you, keeping things moving here.
Okay. So where was that one? I made a massive list. Okay, so Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Right.
Now, one of my favorite bands, I remember it was like 91 or 92 during Christmas. Much music used to put out like the top 500 songs. And throughout Christmas, they would play all the videos and they'd have a countdown to the number one. And Grandmaster Flash, they had a video for the song, The Message.
Yeah.
And it's a very funky, poppy song. It was these guys from like the Bronx that looked edgy in their videos. Every Christmas, I waited for that song.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice.
They rose from fame in the early 80s. One of their successful singles was the song called Freedom. I couldn't relate to them, but just that energy that they had. I waiting for that video, it always seemed to jump. Every year I watched the top 500, they would be closer and closer. I think on your list, they're like in the top 10.
Yeah.
One of those just influential... Number five, one of those influential rap out, or kind of the starting of rap and the understanding of it.
Yes.
All time.
Yeah, certainly. They are one of the greatest rap groups, hip-hop groups, and really sort of at the beginning of that genre, really, right?
Correct.
Injected into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, yeah.
To watch a band so young and be able to create an album, when you listen to them, all the songs in a row, they're very collectively sound the same. They have that same idea. Each one gets different. But you can really see as a young group, they were really trying to sort out that idea and that sound of the album. And it just resonates with me as a really good whole album to listen to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, well, I'm going to go to my number. I had to quickly have a look here and see where I was at on my list, whether I had to change one up, but no, I don't. So let's go with Rush Signals, number 26 on the list. I've become a much bigger Rush fan in my older days, but I remember this one. I don't think I had it on cassette, but I think I remember borrowing it from someone or what have you. You know, it's a classic Canadian album for sure. Subdivisions, great song. New World Man, love that song as well, right? Just fantastic stuff by these Canadian icons, right? If you look at the album itself, the artwork on for Subdivisions, it actually shows like a blueprint for an actual subdivision kind of thing. And I can't quite remember, but like the school name has like there's like, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's very cool to look at and see their sense of humor that always comes through, right? They're so serious in their lyrics and everything, but they've got this wacky Canadian sense of humor that I share. Clifton does too, and I know Steve as well, right? just a great, great album and great band, right?
Talk about another band that was good at promoting themselves. They did a ton of music videos. I think there's two or three for this singles record that they had on Much Music. And again, a lot of their stuff, you really had to see where they were coming from or the explanation. And I think they did a really good job explaining that in their videos, which allowed their rapid fan base. And I don't know if either of you have watched their introduction to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they did it in an arena. And as soon as they got on stage, it was like a 10-minute ovation, a standing ovation. And it was so incredible to hear these people, you know, being so proud of a Canadian band and what they represented. It's phenomenal. Anyone should watch it again. It's on YouTube. It's like 20 minutes long and it's their introduction. I think the Foo Fighters might have.
Yes, Dave Grohl, I think, was the
indexee. Yeah, so good.
Yeah. I just quickly looked it up here. The back cover of the album is a pretend blueprint of a neighborhood with make-believe subdivisions and has a school named Warren Cromartie Secondary School named after the Canadian, I think it was Montreal Expos player, Warren Cromartie. Like,
cool.
Yeah.
Where is that on the list of their albums? Is that like number 10?
Of their albums?
Yeah, like in discography wise. Like,
I don't know.
Like
I'll check.
Okay.
I'm just curious.
It's the beginning. If I'm not mistaken, too, it's sort of the beginning of their synthesizer years as well. Yeah, I think it's the first sort of one that has. I was just looking for that, actually. That's I'm pretty sure that was sort of one of their first where the synth became such a. Big part. So
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So which one were we looking at again?
Signals.
11.
It's yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've, wow. Well,
on Apple, I've it's 10, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in Discogs and I just counted and it, whatever it is, but
yeah, Apple is missing one.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. And that's 1982 and they'd already put out 11. And it's amazing how in 11 albums, how much they were able to adapt to each genre or each decade of music, right? They just got better and better or figuring out what works for them. So cool.
Yeah.
I was listening when I was doing my Judas Priest, you know, like I said, I got down these rabbit holes. It's tough to not sort of take these little detours, but it's good also for the podcast. And you have this additional information, but Rob Halford in an interview was really, you know, emphasizing that if you're going to jump into music and you're going to jump in with both feet, you know, you really have to put in the time. And he says what they say about that 10,000 hours, he says, you have to do it. You have to reach that 10,000 hours in order to get to a place where you really know something about who you are, what your music is, where you want to go with it. this is just a great example of, you know, just a band just putting in the work, you know, night after night after night after night, and coming up with all these albums. Yeah. They've definitely put in their 10,000 plus, and, you know, which makes them just such a great band and highly looked at.
Clifton, let's go. Next pick.
Okay, I'm going to take a little bit of a detour here because it's not much for the entire album, but this song really really captured my my pop rock soul, and it's the Steve Miller Band, Abracadabra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I haven't spent a whole lot of time with the album, but you spin up Abracadabra, and up, I'm on my feet, man. I'm getting down. That's just what I remember, you know, so, and again, right, because all of this music, when you're hearing it for the first time, it catches your ear, you know, it does something to you. You'd either, you know, you're connecting with it in some way, or it's moving you, and this is definitely one of those songs that moves me, so it had to be one of my picks, even if it was just for the one song.
For the one song.
I really do have to get back and like Cam, you've been great to always suggest, you know, listen to the artist, to the album, the way the artist intended, and you know, start from track one and just go straight through and see what it does for you, and you'd be amazed at some of those deep tracks that never really made it to radio, yep, but are such, they're still great songs by these artists, and would probably become instant favorites of yours once you hear them again.
Yeah, I agree. And this is not sort of one of Steve Miller's iconic albums by any stretch, isn't it? But
no. And it's probably why I never really got into the full album, but definitely we'll start to give this another listen. But there was actually four singles that were released. Cool Magic, Keeps Me Wondering Why, Give It Up. The title song was the one that charted the highest, but there definitely is some other songs here too. But I mean, again, it's just you know, one of these albums that set the stage for what was to come.
It got to number one in Canada. I remember it was, it was all over the radio for sure.
Yeah.
I think this is great about the longevity of the artist. Like he had done so many albums prior. He loved what he was doing. I read an article later on, I guess after this album, he went into like some form of depression where he felt that this was it, that he was no longer cared about as an artist. He was just an old has-been. And I guess he did a few tours with Burton Cummings from the Guess Who. And Burton Cummings started to explain that, listen, if you start to do the legwork and reach out there and start doing these smaller concerts, you'll get that that love back from what you were doing before. And I guess him and Burton Cummings were doing these like small concerts, like at fairs or different venues. And then all of a sudden it gained wind and he started to become, he started to making money again. He said he wasn't making money from these albums because he owed so much to the record companies. And then he started to tour, and then he regained his fan base back. I think this was in the early 90s. And he started to understand that appreciation for the fans. I think he was one of the ones that, when he got put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he was very bitter towards the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he was complaining because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame wouldn't pay for his band or the family members. Mm. It was something like a couple thousand dollars just for one seat at a table. And he was very frustrated and didn't want to do it because of the cost. And it really, to him, wasn't about that. It was about the fan base that he had rebuilt. So it was just really interesting to see this longevity on this list of these guys that stuck through it, even after the 80s and into the 90s. And it's really nice that we get to sit and talk about these bands that are still around to today, or maybe yeah. even still creating music. It's cool.
Yeah, I've got a live concert of his on DVD, and it's fantastic. So mid 2010s or something around it in Chicago.
Yeah, I guess I think I misspoke. His earlier albums were sort of the ones that were more well known, yes. I guess, than
yeah.
this one. I think he kind of turned off a few of his fans with this one. He kind of tried to, fit into the 80s, and that's not what his fans wanted. Would be my guess.
Yeah, great song.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, your next pick. I don't remember what number we're at here for you. 3 or 4?
I think 4. This is my 4th.
Okay.
So a lot of the youth now nowadays doesn't realize the amount of work that we had to do. You either had to go down to the store, to Walmart in town, to buy a cassette. Well, or Woolco, I guess, when it was called.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, we had a CD Plus at the mall, so we were able to get our CDs. Or if you were lucky enough, like myself, I was a membership of Columbia House.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to, whatever it was, 10 CDs for a cent or something like that. And then they scammed you into buying or paying overpriced for CDs.
Yeah. Or send you stuff you didn't want because you forgot to say, no, I don't want that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or just never said it, but then you made some poor choices in what you bought for music.
Yeah.
However, one of the smartest choices I ever made was buying a CD by the Velvet Underground, which had the lead singer Lou Reed, which has become one of my top all-time bands of all time. And this Lou Reed album, The Blue Mask, that he had in 1982. I had a chance to skim over some of his songs, which kind of show that delicate side of Lou Reed, where he's just kind of sitting there in a room with maybe acoustic guitar, singing some of these songs that he wrote. The Velvet Underground, with this edgy band in the 60s, influenced by Andy Warhol, which kind of gave Lou Reed the spotlight to become this this really influential artist, where he really struggled over time. A lot of people wanted him to be this edgy punk artist that everyone believed that he was, but he was this poet, and it allowed him to go and escape in the 80s and just kind of fly under the radar and just tell these stories through his music without anyone giving a shit who he was. He was just able to tell his stories the way that he wanted to. And I think out of any artist that I appreciate, I enjoyed him the most because he was just to his truest form. He talked about his drug abuse, his relationships with people that were not so good. And I think that just made him a good artist to me, because in some cases you could relate with just not the the fluff or a story that was made up. This was this guy's heart that he was putting out to, and he was kind of flying under the radar. So I've always appreciated his music, and he's just one of those ones that he's like my ultimate go-to.
Yeah, this is his 11th album, right? The album is Blue Mask, right? The Blue Mask.
Correct. The Blue Mask, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at this track list and I don't see anything that I recognize.
That's what I mean. And he was kind of one of those ones where he just did what he wanted. And he wasn't looking for hits. He was like Neil Young at the time in the 80s, when Neil Young could just not care about anything. He was just, I think he maintained with whoever his publisher was. I think it was whoever was paying for the records. He had stayed with them for a long time and was really dedicated to them. And at that time, I think they were just letting him do what he wanted,
mm-hmm.
but he was just kind of writing these songs for himself. At that same time, I think he was involved in a relationship with Laurie Anderson, who's also on the list. She did a couple famous albums. They were very artsy, and up until their death, they were still together. So they really had that love affair for each other. Totally complete opposites in what they wrote for music, but they mm-hmm. understood each other, which was a really nice kind of love story for the two of them.
Okay. I'll have to check it out over the holidays here, perhaps. So.
Don't cry. You might cry a little bit.
I might. I'm going to go to my next pick. A little bit odd. You guys might question this one, but I'm going to go with the Alan Parsons Project, Eye in the Sky. This would have been in my, it would have been in the mix for my top, my quarantine five. I got into Alan Parsons a little bit at this point in time. I was grade nine kid playing on the basketball team, and I think we used the one of their songs as a the instrumental piece Sirius. I think it became big in the 90s with it was the Chicago Bulls basketball, sort of their intro song. I remember using it as well as I was just a water boy on the team, but the older guys on the team had this, and that was kind of our song. And so I heard them playing it, so I went out and bought it. And it's, again, one that I could listen to from start to finish, kind of thing. Really interesting band. Alan Parsons is not actually a musician. He's an engineer. He was actually the engineer on the Abbey Road, I believe, with the Beatles. And basically, cool. It's basically all studio musicians that he brings together, and he's kind of the mastermind behind it all, right? But there's often there's three or four different lead singers. There's always some instrumental stuff. It's just a really cool album. It's got some classical backing tracks, kind of thing, classical feel to it. Some really Psycho Babble is one of my favorites. Probably you guys never heard of that one. Old and Wise, I think, was the grad song for the class of 82. Shout out to Nipawa Collegiate's class of 82. right. And so I kind of got into them a little bit, but this is really the only sort of album that of theirs that I've got a couple downstairs on vinyl. I haven't really dug into them, but, if you haven't listened to Eye in the Sky, check it out. It's, interesting.
What I find incredible about this guy is he was just pumping out stuff. He released something in 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, yeah. 82, 83, 85. Like, he didn't stop.
Yeah.
87, 88, 90.
Yeah. My favorite singer that he has is a guy called, I don't even know how to say his name, Lenny Zakatak, but just a great voice. You've probably heard some of their... I Wouldn't Want to Be Like You, Gangs People Play. Those are their ones from earlier than that. But this particular album is one of my favorites.
Was he part of the Flying Burrito Brothers?
I don't believe so, no. I don't know if he actually plays an instrument.
Huh.
Lou Reed or the Zac Attack?
No, Alan Parsons, I mean. Yeah, oh no, it says he's a musician, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think he was also... he was involved with Dark Side of the Moon as well.
That's so cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite albums.
Yeah. So anyways, check it out. Eye in the Sky. Let's go to Clifton.
Okay. I was just going to look at the Flying Burrito Brothers.
Oh, he was in the Flying Burrito Brothers.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great band too. They did two good albums. Yeah. Alan Parsons is responsible for a lot of underrated music. Yes. Like he
Yeah, he's a bit of a name within the in the industry, but not really sort of known outside that.
Yeah. Well, with this is my fifth pick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a theme here. It's heavy metal, hard rock, gnarly vocals. I mean, I got dancing a little bit there with Abracadabra, but I'm jumping right back into it. Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast. Again, just an album that I could probably go back to time and time again. You know, just what they were able to bring to this. It's more theatrical, right? I mean, same with Judas Priest. I mean, Judas Priest is such great stage shows, but Iron Maiden really took it to another level. And I was reading somewhere that it's really academia. This is academia rock because they're bringing you sort of these history lessons. You know, they're using mythology and Greek mythology and just all kinds of great American history. And just the dual, you know, the dual guitars that they've got going on this particular album. It was Adrian Smith and I'm going to forget the other guy's name. I better look it up. Adrian Smith and Dave Murray. And then KK Downing came on, I think after, it might've been after this album. I'm not sure. I have to look that up as well. But, and then Bruce Dickinson with those soaring vocals, Run to the Hills, Number of the Beast, The Prisoner, Children of the Damned, Invaders, all just, you know, songs that I could listen to time and time again. And there was actually some controversy right with this album, of course. You know, they've got the devil on the album cover, and then Eddie, who's their sort of their mascot in the background there, who I think could probably handle the devil. He seems pretty nasty guy as well. But the Number of the Beast was a song that, you know, they caught a little bit of controversy for, especially when it came over to the United States side. There was a lot of religious people that were not very happy about it. And actually during the recording of this album, there was strange things that are documented to have happened to the band. So in the studio, things would break down, lights would flicker. And actually probably the most strangest of all would be the producer, I think got into a car accident, and it was a bus load of nuns that he crashed into.
Wow.
So the story goes, I think Wikipedia might have a little bit of something about that too, but, once again, you know, Run to the Hills, probably one of my, you know, favorite songs up there. So,
do you ever see them live?
No, I'm YouTube. I YouTube a lot of their concerts. Still great stuff. I actually heard that he was actually reprimanding somebody for lighting up in the stage not long ago. I guess they were just trying to light up a joint or two, and I think he stopped and reprimanded them.
Wow!
I gotta confirm that. That's kind of surprising, but.
I saw them about 10 years ago. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And the amount of energy that band had, they had this crazy ramp behind the drums, and he would run like back and forth to make sure that he went to each side of the stage. And like, he had to be at least in his 50s when I saw him, or maybe a little bit older. And the fact that guy was still able to run in a leather suit back and forth so many times, I was very impressed.
Hmm. Yeah.
My I'm not an Iron Maiden fan at all, but my little story here with them is I remember as a kid being in Steinbach, of all places, for volleyball provincials. I'm going to say probably fall of 82. And they had Eddie painted on the gym wall. I couldn't believe it, in Steinbach, of all places. You know, for those listeners that don't know, Steinbach is the capital city of Manitoba's Bible Belt, for sure. So that was a little shocking in my mind. I can't imagine that going over now in a school. All right, Cote, your fifth and last pick.
Can we go back 1 second?
Oh, yeah, geez.
Well, we just need to give some of these bands so much praise. Like, you know, they created these musics for a genre for these people, but then they're still amazing individuals. Like the lead singer, he's a commercial pilot. He's a very smart man. Mm-hmm. And for the fact that he was able to, you know, create a genre of music for people to enjoy, not out of like spite, and then to grow up and use his talent or whatever he was created to do other things. Like I said, I think he has a couple degrees, but one of the ones is he's a commercial pilot and he fixes his own planes. Like, that's pretty cool.
I think he flew the band, did he not?
Maybe.
I think
like,
so.
Still, that's so neat. I appreciate that they're not using their money just for other things, that they're actually using it to better themselves in society. Mm-hmm. It's super neat.
I like that we went back, because I do also have to say that, you know, the production, the writing, like these just weren't things that, you know, they were getting together and oops, you know, this just happened. Like these guys were putting the work in. Like they were dreaming this stuff up and what they wanted to do. And then they were making it work. Like this was the first album, I think, that Bruce Dickinson came on for Iron Maiden, and it was Paul Di'Anno. Mm-hmm. And the producer didn't think that Paul Di'Anno, he couldn't handle sort of the vision that they had for this writing style that they were coming up with. So all the theatrics, like, I mean, this was all thought up ahead of time. They knew what they were doing. They were creating this music. And, you know, it's just it's something that maybe people don't think about, you know, with rock and roll or heavy metal, that, you know, you can sort of have this vision, and it's not just getting together and banging your heads against the wall and coming up with something.
Yeah. Okay. Cote, your last pick.
Okay. My last pick is the Go-Go's, I think it's called Vacation. Now, I've been a Go-Go's fan. I watched a documentary a few years ago about them, and I think it's on Netflix, and it shows the early days of these females that are punk band, or formed as a punk band. Mm. And what a great documentary. And I think this leads into that idea, what Clifton said about Iron Maiden, where they had a plan and a vision. Belinda Carlisle, who was the front singer, she was talking about how they got together. They were like just kids, and they started to play around. And then all of a sudden it started to work. And within like a year, they perfected the sound of an actual band working together. And then they just started to get older and wiser and work towards what was coming to them as what was getting more different genres of music was coming out. And so as a group, they were like, we need to change a few things, and they adapted, and they just started getting better and better with their music. Yes, there was maybe a few feuds, but they all came together, and then they branched out to become even more successful in what they were doing. So it's really interesting to watch a band start so young in a totally different genre of like screaming punk music to these well thought out cured songs that everyone can relate to nowadays. I just find it so fascinating.
This was their second album, Vacation, with Beauty and the Beat being the first one. But yeah, great pick. Definitely all female group, right? Which is really cool. And I've seen that documentary on Netflix.
You did, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's got, I thought Joan Jett was involved in that documentary as well, but maybe it's a different one I'm thinking of.
Well, I think one of the girls ended up going into the Bangles, right? And then
could be, yeah.
They already had 10 years of performing in this punk band before they started releasing albums. So they were really well educated in how to use their instruments. I think some of them in the early days, they never used instruments before. So to see how well polished they were in 1982 with this second album, you said, it's just to me is like, no wonder they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Belinda Carlisle was in the Germs as a early with, Pat Smear, right?
Yes, what a good, that's a good band too.
Yeah. Okay, so my last pick, I have to do a substitute pick because Clifton picked my Billy Idol one. So, and I had a tough choice here because 82 Cam would pick the Dire Straits album, and I think I had a single off that album, but I'm going to go with 2022 Cam, and we are going to go with Tom Petty's what is it, Long After Dark? I'm trying to find it here.
Yeah, Long After Dark. Yep. Long number after 56 dark. On the list.
Right. Okay. So I'm gonna go with this. I was not a huge Tom Petty fan in 1982, but as you both know, a big fan now. And just a great some great songs on here. Straight Into Darkness Live is a great song off his live anthology album. You got Lucky's a pretty big one there, but my favorite from this one is Change Your Heart, and I regret, Clifton, that we did not add it to the set list for the Tom Petty tribute night. I don't know why no one did it.
Yeah, I think I think it was on my list, was it not? And there was it kind of got the bump. I think we came onto it, I think, a little too late in our process. Yeah,
I think,
and we were just running out of time. But it was one that we definitely did want, and we should have had in the show. But it's not too late. We've got big plans.
Maybe that's true. That's true. We run our own show, so. So yeah, that's going to be my fifth pick, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Long After Dark of 1982. Okay. So I think that concludes, I think everyone's had our five picks. Okay. Yeah. That we're going to sort of discuss, in depth, although that was brief, some briefer than others. but so let's go to Clifton now. Give me your, we're going to try to come up with, 40, 45 of our top 40. So give me five more, Clifton, here, and we'll get people to vote on theirs as well when we're all done production here. So from the list, give me five more. Just rattle them off.
Five more from the list?
Yeah, you can't talk about them.
I think the number one on the list, and nowadays, you know, people may take a bit of a step back from this selection,
right?
Just because of you know the information that's out there now. But back then, number one was Michael Jackson's Thriller,
right?
And so you can't not go to it,
yes.
Because I mean, this was number one. It was so influential. The music was just, if you go and look at the production credits on this album, it's the who's who.
Hey, I thought we weren't supposed to be talking about these.
You cannot. It's
I know.
It's a Quincy Jones. Yeah. I was sorry. Yeah, yeah. So
and the video, right? I mean, let's face it. When Thriller comes on as a video, you kind of gotta watch it.
You kind of gotta watch. Yeah,
kind of gotta watch it.
So that's one. You know, I'll probably. A closet pick for me might be Duran Duran's Rio. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you're coming home after school, you're putting on video hits, and, you know, that music's playing, and Duran Duran, and you can't just sit there and tap your foot to it. An album that I do need to get myself back to and is Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska.
Yeah.
I would probably get myself back into that one. You had one of my, well, it was sort of a pick on the outer exterior there, was Men at Work. I know we said it already, but that would have been mine. The Clash, Combat Rock.
Combat Rock.
Yeah. That would have been another one of mine that I probably would have went for. And then how much more do I have to go here? One more?
I don't know. I'm not coming.
Let me see here.
George Thorogood.
George Thorogood. That's the one. Yeah, that's the one.
We both. That was one we shared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, give me five.
So my five from my list was basically ones that were just so underrated. Most of them were ones that kind of maybe had one or no albums in 1982. One of the bands is called The Fall. Very punk oriented, just a really good overall kind of early punk band. Great sound, very consistent in lyrics. The Misfits was on the list, Walking Among Us. It was their first record. Again, it has that nice raw punk sound where they're just starting off, and they have that vibe where they're all dressed in black, very emo. But when you listen to the album, they do not go together at all. It's just a really nice, well put together album, but they're more relying on their looks. Venom, which was they were the first black metal band. Again, when you listen to the album, it doesn't feel dark to me. It's just a nice sounding metal record, where it just kind of, it all has the same consistency. A great band, which is very underrated, called The Descendants, Milo Goes to College. If you know that intro of Kids in the Hall, that kind of like, I don't know, boppy.
Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet.
That's kind of what they sound like, but in a more new wave and punky sound. And I was like, wow, this is better than I remembered it sounding.
Yeah.
And the last one is The Cure. The Cure just got inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they've always hated the idea of being public. They're all about fan base. They have tons of hits. They had that one on Much Music was about cats, I think, and he's rolling around in a box singing the songs. Another kind of punky emo band, but then they just kept what they were doing and they just got better at it. So I think this list just shows how great and a variety of just trying to understand so much music at once. I think we could spend like 5 days doing through this
for sure.
Okay, that's my five.
Okay, so here's my five. Here I'm gonna go my sixth pick. I'm gonna go with the Dire Straits, Love Over Gold. I love Industrial Disease. That's one of my favorite Dire Straits songs there. Just fantastic production. Mark Knopfler's just a guitar genius. So flipped and picked a couple of mine here. So I think we'd be remiss without saying Prince's 1999.
Yep.
Huge seller. Number two on the list. I don't remember how many singles, but let's party like it's 1999, right? yeah. Just and, you know, I was not a Prince fan back then particularly, but I've become a fan and certainly recognize his genius. So I'm also going to go with Donald Fagen, The Nightfly, just a fantastic album as well. Just really cool stuff there, kind of a bit under the radar a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only got four. I could only come up with four here. So the last one, this was voted number one on Sirius's list by their many, many listeners, and it hasn't been mentioned yet. So Van Halen's Diver Down was voted number one on the top 40 cassettes turning 40 this year. So I'm gonna go with that one. It's a good one, that's for sure. And it was, well, as they said, voted. I'm not sure what, can't remember the songs that were on this one. I know on the Gary Precision one we did, we certainly talked about Diver Down, right? Oh Pretty Woman's on this one. Dancing in the Street, that's a good one too. We might have to add that one to Camelpalooza Clifton. So
this is number 72 on the list. So if it was number one on another list, it's amazing how, like,
yes,
that's a big jump.
That is huge. I know. I was, when I heard it, I was driving around town and I just happened to catch the last two albums. Number two was the John Cougar one that I picked, American Fool. And then I was like, okay, what could it possibly be number one? And I'm like, what, Diver Down? I mean, that's, you know, it's a great album, but top one of 82. All due respect to Eddie and the guys, but
this list was I don't want to say it was hard. It was quite easy because there was, you know, the five albums that I chose, you know, they stood out for me, you know, almost immediately because they've been so influential in my life. But you go through this list and it's artist after artist after band that you could probably connect to. Just lately in just searching for material for Revolving Doors, like I came across Billy Squire, and in the past I never really put too much effort into checking anything but I mean, he's got some great material. There's Chicago is on this list. Crosby, Stills and Nash, Accept is another hard rock band. Scorpions. I mean, there's tons of music on this list that you can go back to and just enjoy.
Fleetwood Mac, Aretha Franklin. Like, it's Billy Joel's on this list. Joe Jackson, Phil Collins, Lionel Richie. Luther Vandross, Robert Plant,
Paul McCartney.
Susie and the Banshees. Great band. Apparently, she's making her first public concert appearance. I don't know if it's happened or if it's coming up, but if you're ever into Susie and the Banshees, check that out. I think she's playing again.
Awesome. Well, thanks, fellas. This has been fun. It's been a while since we've done a podcast, and it was kind of interesting topic kind of thing. I think maybe we should make this an annual event, Clifton, where we... Next year, we'll do the top 40 songs of that are turning 40 in 1983, I guess. So you guys will have all...
Or 1932.
Yeah, you guys will all have been a year older, so... maybe we'll start the list early and do a little more research and do a better job.
I think that went really well. That was good.
It was great. So,
yeah, that was great.
And we'll try to get a poll up so that people can vote on theirs. I know that some people have some time on their hands. Maybe they're traveling or just chilling at home over the holidays. So we'll try to get that out to people we can vote and see how people, what the masses say here in our crowd. So,
out of the top five of our, like, how do we match up? What would people put 1 to 15?
Right.
You know, like we've mentioned sort of 40-ish albums, or did we?
Somewhere there, we're close.
But even out of the top five, like, what's, you know, how would you arrange our picks from 1 to 15?
What should we, you know what, let's play a little Thriller. We'll play a little Thriller on our way out here.
I was gonna say, we need a sound bite.
Let's beat, play it. A little Thriller,
beat it.
I think I'm gonna go with Thriller because it's like, or maybe Party Like It's 1999. Either one of them. Maybe both. Yeah. Who knows? Okay. Thanks, fellas.
Okay. Sounds good. See you.
See ya.